Chapter 5 Flesh and Bone. 4 months later. The axe crashed down onto the white picket fence, splitting the wood with ease. Lucy grunted in approval. Over the past 4 months, she'd seen the river freeze over entirely, the ground turn to compact permafrost, and the habitable rooms in the house shrink down to one. Her breath misted as she scooped the last of the wood into a bucket and dragged it back, the cold air snatching at her scalp as she went, punishing her for shearing off too much of her dirty, matted hair. Subsistence defined her life now. Every day was devoted to gathering enough wood fuel to melt and sterilize the freezing water, and she needed to stretch out the food supplies until she could grow vegetables again. Re-entering the house and stepping over her mattress, she tipped the wood onto the once cream carpet where it would begin to dry out in front of the stove, ready to be stoked later that day. She never let the fire die out. The living room was now the only room that didn't have permanent frost on the insides of the windows. Her eyes fell on the maroon wallpaper. The sprawling chalk tally she'd been scratching onto it each day made the room look like a very art house prison. 128 short white lines were etched onto the wall, attesting her stay. The warm glow of the fire reflected off the fake mahogany furniture and the large leather sofa opposite the redundant TV. On the floor, 2 yards from the fireplace, was Lucy's mattress, adorned with a scrunched-up duvet and 2 grimy-looking pillows. She dragged them all down from upstairs a couple of months ago when the weather had really turned. Next to the mattress, away from the fire, was a spotless plate with a knife and fork which had been abandoned at an angle. Surrounding it was a small pile of books, all with makeshift bookmarks protruding out from the pages. Preserving Game, Great American Leaders, and The Horse-Rearing Manual. They weren't her usual go-to choices for light reading.
"Okay, barn time, Lucy. Come on, barn time,"
she said, rallying herself as she headed back outside, grabbing a colander from the gloomy kitchen as she went. She crunched across the gravel yard towards the large metal barn. At the periphery of the former grazing field stood 3 empty stables, relics of the property's bygone vibrancy. But Lucy wasn't overly sentimental about the missing horses, despite her reading list. Perhaps the owners had set them free when they left, or taken them with them. Either way, they'd left behind the horse feed, and those vast sacks of oats had become a staple of Lucy's survival.
"Lovely morning. Lovely, lovely morning. I think you'll agree," she sang, clanging the colander against her leg as she reached the concrete barn floor.
Stacks of rectangular hay bales stretched all the way up to the corrugated roof, around 20 feet high. Loose straw pieces attached themselves to the underside of her boots as she walked over to a crate at the side.
"Why is the morning lovely?"
She stopped and glared at the colander.
"Because it's sunny. God, it's like I have to teach you everything."
She danced her hands back and forth over the open top pallet containing the earthy potatoes she'd picked months ago.
"I choose you,"
she exclaimed, suddenly pouncing upon a medium-sized one.
"Better luck next time, fellas,"
she remarked to the other potatoes.
"Now, if you'll excuse me, it's time I checked in with your cousins."
Lucy ambled through the barn, weaving between bales of hay and inspecting the other boxes of potatoes she'd stashed away.
"Philip, you motherfucker,"
she proclaimed, grimacing as she picked up a blackening spud from the 3rd box.
"Trying to ruin the party for everyone else, are we? We can't have that. No, no. In the pot you go."
She dropped the rotting culprit into the colander and rooted around the rest of the box for signs of contagion.
"All clear, folks. Just a drill,"
she reassured the remainder as she moved on to the carrots, selecting 2 crooked orange truncheons for that day's menu. She grunted as she headed back to the kitchen, pausing to enjoy the sun's warmth on her face. She left the colander and its contents on the sideboard next to her washed-up porridge bowl and grabbed the 2 empty water buckets.
"Unlimited free refills, folks. It really is the deal of the century. Best make the most of it,"
she declared, setting off in the opposite direction, across the frozen vegetable field towards the river. As she approached the babble of the melting brook, the familiar wreck of her abandoned car came into view across the other riverbank. Only, there was something by it. Lucy stopped dead in her tracks, completely rigid, not moving an inch, unable to take her eyes off the immobile figure.
She hadn't seen another living thing in 4 months. Her heart pounded as the saliva drained from her mouth. She didn't dare to blink, but stood rooted to the spot as her optic nerves relayed the same insistent message to her disbelieving brain. The creature's fur was pure white, luminescent almost. The magnificent spines, articulated by key vertebrae, rippled in the wind like sails. It was completely motionless. One arm lay outstretched, the other tucked beneath its torso, its broad back half burying it from view. Two muscular legs splayed out from behind the body, pointing to its footprints higher up the bank, which ran down to their lifeless master like a set of broken tracks. Moving as slowly as possible, she lowered each bucket to the ground in absolute silence. She lay down between them, flat across the frozen mud, raising only her head to see the beast where it lay. She hadn't seen the creatures since escaping Fraser, and even then she had not seen one this size or color before, let alone in daylight. Lucy crawled forwards no more than a yard, then stopped and reassessed. Still no movement from the body. She crawled again, a little further this time. Nothing. She paused and scanned around. There were no signs of life anywhere at all across the other bank or on her side. The thing looked dead. Lucy climbed to her feet again and began to edge away backwards, leaving the buckets where they were. The creature didn't move. Keeping her eyes on its white body, she retreated until the verge obscured it from view, then ran. Her head felt light with the exertion. Bursting into the house, she slammed the kitchen door behind her and raced to the living room, trailing clumps of frozen dirt across the tiles and carpets as she went. Diving onto the mattress, she grabbed the gun from under her pillow and sprinted back to the kitchen window, which overlooked the vegetable field. The field was deserted. Only her two water buckets stood out at the far end. "Think, think," she said to herself, trying to gather her panicking mind. She ran back into the hallway and up the staircase, mud splattering the sideboards and walls as she went. Breathless, she arrived at the previous owner's room. She fell to her knees and began frantically searching the drawers, tipping each one out and trawling through its contents. She leapt to her feet and began flipping cupboards open, digging through shelves and boxes, until she found what she was looking for. Binoculars. She grabbed the gun back off the bed and checked out of the window. Still, nothing. She rushed down the stairs and set off across the frozen vegetable field once again, checking the gun chamber as she went. She hastened forwards, stooping as she ran, suppressing the tide of nausea climbing through her as she approached the lip of the riverbank. The creature was still there, exactly as she'd first seen it. Lucy slowed, now that it was in plain view, and cautiously made her way down the embankment to the river's edge. The ice was too thin to risk walking across straightforwardly, and a channel of meltwater flowed quickly through the center, cutting Lucy off from the other side. She raised the binoculars to her eyes, pointing them at the beast, her fingers jerking clumsily as she fumbled the focal dial into position. The creature really was perfectly still, no signs of breathing. She lowered the binoculars, skittishly checking her surroundings for signs of more pack members, but there was nothing. Once again, she peered through the lenses, this time daring to take longer over the observation. This beast was distinct from the ones she'd encountered months ago, not just in the color of its coat, but the whole skeletal structure. Its size, limb ratio, skull design, almost everything was different in some way. Even the ribcage had a new protective, translucent tissue covering it. Yet the texture of the fur, the tapering of the jaw, the overall makeup of the thing was consistent with the beasts she'd seen before. It had to be, at least, a genetic cousin. She scanned its body for clues, but there were no obvious signs of bodily damage, no flesh wounds or lesions or bullet holes, nothing that had punctured the back, at least. She needed to see its underside to understand what had killed it, and the only way to do that would be to cross the icy channel.
Lucy abandoned the scene and hastily returned to the house, shoving her notepad and pen into a backpack. Josh's insistence that they document everything they encountered rang in her ears as she grabbed the ladder from the adjacent barn and hurried back to the site. She arrived at the frozen bank of the river and lay the ladder down, sliding it across until it spanned both icy banks. Lucy's bridge was ready. She knelt down on all fours and very cautiously began to move forward, advancing one limb at a time. The ice creaked beneath her as it took the strain. In her gaunt, malnourished state, a fall into waters this cold could be fatal. As she shuffled across the middle section of the ladder, the babbling water splashed up into the gap between her coat and gloves, sending shivers across her body. The water between the rungs wet her knees and knuckles too, soaking into her clothes. She kept her eyes firmly on the creature's body as she moved, eventually drawing level with her wrecked car. The river had broadened and risen significantly over the winter, claiming more of the car for itself and ruling out any possibility of wading between the two banks. Clambering to her feet unsteadily, she found her balance on the solid ice and tore off her sodden gloves, immediately drawing her holstered gun and training it on the corpse. On its hind legs, the motionless creature would have been around 10 or 11 feet, around twice her height. As she moved closer, leaving the ice and finding frozen grass underfoot, Lucy's eyes flitted to the knife-length claws at the end of the creature's limbs. She skirted around the body at a 6-yard radius, ready to fire at the slightest movement. As she neared 180 degrees, the beast's face became visible for the first time. Its gray tongue hung limply from its mouth, the bottom of its jaw offset slightly from the rest of its head, where its sunken black eyes stared out lifelessly into the distance, one partially covered by a translucent white eyelid. On either side of the tongue were familiar rows of large teeth, which on closer inspection appeared to be serrated, each curving enamel blade gilded in a dozen smaller blades, honed to inflict maximum damage on its victim. Its facial structure was somewhere between a bear's and a dog's. The width of the skull and jaw could have belonged to a grizzly, but its pointed ears were befitting of a jackal. Lucy's eyes moved to the beast's back and its great protruding spines. They were sharp, ending in the same dark points as the creature's claws. The glossy white skin, made up of fine scales, was torn between the 5th and 6th vertebral column. Its perforated sheets flapped loosely in the breeze. At the base of the torso began a tail almost as long as the creature itself, extending far beyond its legs and terminating in a lump. Lucy walked back around to where the tail ended and knelt down for a better view. The tip was obscured by mud. Hesitantly, she reached out. Taking the tail between her thumb and finger, she lifted the tip off the ground, raising it from the frozen mud to face her.
"Oh, fuck!"
she cried as a glossy, beveled black eyeball stared back at her. She dropped the tail and scrabbled backwards in abhorrence. Grimacing, she reached out a wavering hand and picked the tail back up. The eye was almost entirely black. She reaffirmed her grip on the handgun, terrified the eye might swivel in its socket to focus on her at any moment. Lucy inspected closer. There was a subtle color difference between the black of the pupil and the dark brown iris. A single dark eyelid lay crumpled over the tip, and adjacent to it was a small pink gland. Dropping the tail, Lucy lifted a boot to the dead beast's shoulder and shoved in an attempt to roll the thing over onto its back. The body weighed a ton, and it took a few kicking rocks to build up enough momentum to roll the torso over. She gasped. The injuries were not what she was expecting. The creature had deep cuts in its thighs and chest, revealing a mass of glistening black muscle tissue. The texture reminded Lucy of an orca's skin. There was no way a human could have inflicted such injuries. This was the work of another beast. She threw her eyes around the landscape once again, raising her gun out before her as she searched. But of course there were no signs of life. It was daytime. As she looked down at the corpse once again, a memory from the hike to Fraser came to her. She remembered Josh, the botanist, kneeling down and photographing the butterfly globule on the track, and later photographing the dissolving bodies of the town. His mantra resonated with her now. She had to document everything about this encounter. If she could figure out where this creature might be anatomically weakest, she'd know where to shoot next time one attacked. Her backpack contained a notepad, but not a full autopsy kit. She'd have to fetch cutting equipment from the house, and maybe containers to put body parts in. She retraced her crawl across the ladder bridge and hurried up the opposite riverbank, only to stop dead in her tracks as she reached the top. Up ahead, approaching her house, was a black SUV. Humans. Four men jumped from the back of the open truck, followed by the driver and a passenger from the front. All six of them had weapons, a mixture of assault rifles and handguns. Lucy dived behind the verge, pressing her body into the cold ground and peering over the parapet, bringing the binoculars to her eyes as the armed men approached the house. Her mind raced. The men looked hostile. They reminded her of the militia that appeared in San Francisco, self-styled, heavily armed. If she did nothing, they might discover her food stores or her wood fuel, but there was no way she could fend them off alone, with just the handgun and no vantage point. Besides, if they found her... A shiver crawled up her spine and she pressed herself closer against the ground. With the binoculars glued to her eyes, she prayed for something to distract the men, to draw them away. The passenger from the front appeared to be the leader. He wore a brown cowboy hat, a dark green hunting jacket, black cargo pants, and tan boots. He signaled the other four men to head to the rear of the house, while he and the skinhead driver approached the main entrance. As his men skirted the building, the man in the cowboy hat tore open the white screen door with force and proceeded onto the wooden porch. He banged his rifle against Lucy's blue door three times. Heart racing, keeping her body pressed to the ground, Lucy panned between the front and back of the house, struggling to keep track of both groups. Of the four men around the back, three disappeared into the kitchen. The fourth man kept watch from outside, keeping both the kitchen and the car in his sight. His arrogant body language oozed boredom. His gun swung idly by his camouflage pants as he kicked stones around, pulling his gray hoodie over his head and fixing a hand in one pocket, his arm pressed tightly against his body. At the front of the house, meanwhile, the cowboy leader had taken a seat on the porch bench and lit a cigarette. At the rear, something made the idle guard reapproach the kitchen door, presumably shouts from inside. Lucy strained her ears but couldn't make out his replies as he relayed the message to the leader around the front of the house. The leader jogged around the side of the house towards the kitchen, followed by the skin-headed driver. Lucy could see the guard's lips moving as he said something inaudible to the pair. Neither acknowledged him. Instead, they jogged past and into the kitchen. The sulking guard pulled hard on the strings of his hood so that it shrank around his head, then kicked the gravel around again. More muffled conversation turned the guard's head back towards the kitchen. The rest of the gang were now re-emerging, laughing and joking, each with an armful of looted possessions. One of them chucked a bra at the hooded guard while returning to the SUV, causing great hilarity for his comrades. The guard derisively shook it off his foot, visibly cursing them. The leader and driver also re-emerged from the kitchen, but headed away from the others, instead walking purposefully into the barn while the others continued towards the vehicle. Lucy tracked her binoculars back to the looters busily loading up the SUV. She quivered with rage as she watched all her hard-earned firewood disappear into the back of the truck, along with piles of towels, coats, and other precious burnable items. A shot rang out from the barn, startling Lucy as she cowered on the cold soil. She watched as the tall, cowboy hat-wearing gang leader emerged from the metal doorway, alone, casually replacing his handgun in the back of his jeans. Back at the truck, the gang had finished loading, They slouched idly against the black SUV as their leader swanned back into their midst and said something Lucy couldn't hear. It made the others laugh, including the hooded guard this time. All returned to their seats, apart from a short Latino man with aviator-shaped sunglasses and an earring. He now took up the driver's position. The new driver revved the engine unnecessarily, propelling the car backwards as he threw it into a flashy handbrake turn on the gravel drive. The vehicle sped away down the long drive, eventually reaching the road and disappearing from sight and sound within less than a minute. Lucy stayed hidden for a good while longer, counting the minutes as best she could to steady her nerves and make sure her emergence into the open wasn't premature. "Fuck it," she said, steeling herself midway through the 9th minute of counting. "Fuck it and fuck them," she repeated, forcing herself forwards over the lip and into the field, where she approached the house at a run, not slowing until she reached the gravel drive. The white kitchen door was open as the men had left it. Lucy stood on the gravel, torn between confronting what she knew awaited her in the barn and learning what the bastards had done to her home and possessions. She stepped into the kitchen, where the floor bore the muddy footprints of each visitor. The cupboards and drawers all hung open. The fuckers had taken her matches. With growing trepidation, she approached the living room. The perma-crackle of the fire that she had grown accustomed to was no more. In its place was a watery paste of charred wood and ash, which spewed unconcernedly over the chimney's bottom bricks and onto the carpet below. "Bastards! You vindictive bastards!" she bellowed, kicking a cabinet in frustration and fracturing the paneling. Trembling with rage, she surveyed the room. The stench of urine hit her nostrils as she approached the bed and discovered the sodden sheets and duvet. "You fucking animals!" she screamed. The fire was out, the wood was gone, the food was gone, and her bed was ruined. The whole room was ruined, and the upstairs had been trashed too. Every semblance of stability she had fought to build from her own sweat and tears had been taken from her in the blink of an eye, all done by the first humans she'd encountered in 4 months. Knowing the house held nothing for her anymore, she confronted the barn. The dead driver lay face down on the concrete floor, stray pieces of straw sticking out at odd angles beneath him. A bullet had exploded through the back of the driver's head, revealing pulverized pinkish-gray brain matter. A pool of blood seeped out onto the floor, and the body of the white beast suddenly returned to the fore of Lucy's mind. The beast that had been killed by other beasts. She had to erase every trace of the blood by nightfall. With great effort, Lucy loaded 10 hay bales into a wheelbarrow and ferried them one by one from the barn to the yard. There she arranged them in a long rectangular shape onto which she dragged her piss-soaked mattress and bedding. Finally, hauling the dead driver's body on top of that, she topped it all with the blood-soaked rags she'd used to clean and bleach the barn floor and the sheets she dragged the man's body on. The sun was well into the last quarter of its arc by the time she had finished building the pyre. She hadn't had to make a fire for months, having kept one going almost constantly throughout the winter out of necessity. But she no longer had the help of matches. Growling, she struck 2 pieces of flint together, over and over again above the pyre. A spark finally hit the hay and began to take. Lucy breathed life into it, fanning the flames, and then set fire to a rag wrapped around a stick, which she used to light the other bales in turn. Lucy stood back and watched as the flame spread through the dry tinder. They lapped at the mattress and body from all sides until the whole lot was ablaze. "Gah!" she choked, covering her mouth with her shirt as the putrid smell of burning flesh reached her nostrils. As night fell, Lucy retreated indoors to the frigid house, where she continued to watch the flames feed on the fruits of her misery. The pyre slowly crumpled in on itself, stooping to the ground as the structural hay disintegrated. Lucy breathed softly into her freezing fingertips in a bid to warm them. 8th of February, estimated. Those motherfuckers broke into my house. Thank God I was down by the river. There were 6 of them.
They pissed on my clothes and bed and in the water. They found my primary stashes of oats, potatoes, and carrots in the barn and took them. They even shot one of their guys dead in there. His body's burning in the yard as I write. I had to clear up all of his blood. There are beasts in the area. I found the body of one by the river. It's white and much bigger than the black ones from the train. I was about to do an autopsy when the gang arrived. I was planning on doing the creature's autopsy tomorrow, but I have to go get fresh water and chop more firewood. They took that too. I also need to revise my ration count. I still have some oats and vegetables left in the better hidden reserve stores, but I reckon it's only enough to last a few weeks. There's no way I'll be harvesting anything from here for at least 2 months. It's just way too cold. In other words, those bed-pissing animals have given me a death sentence. When the next morning broke, Lucy was shivering with cold. With no fireplace in the upstairs master bedroom and only layers of clothes and a blanket to keep her warm, she might as well have slept outdoors. She sniffed away some runny mucus from her freezing nose, standing in the kitchen, boots on, but with the blanket still draped around her quivering shoulders. She surveyed the charred remnants of her bonfire. Shit! She cried, grabbing a mug from the counter and hurling it to the ground. It shattered loudly, blending with her cacophony of follow-up expletives. She confronted the view outside once more. You could still discern the outline of the mattress, a pile of ash mingled with bones in the middle. It would take a second bonfire to reduce it any further, and that would require wood. The hay had burned too quickly. She shuffled into the living room and confronted the work to be done. The smell of piss had faded now that the mattress was gone, but the wet ash was still seeping into the carpet, spewing out of the fireplace from where the gang had needlessly extinguished her fire. Readjusting her beanie hat so that it covered her earlobes, Lucy returned to the master bedroom upstairs, where she dispensed with the blanket and adopted several more layers of clothes. "What's the point?" she moaned as her head pounded with cold and hunger. "Get a grip! Get a grip! Get a grip!" she slapped her cheeks until they burned. "Okay, day 129. You are going to be better than day 128 because I can't handle 2 days like that in a row. Deal? Great, yeah. Seems only fair, doesn't it?" she rambled, pulling the third pair of socks right up until they covered half of each shin. She caught her reflection in the dresser mirror. "Oh boy, work to be done there," she scowled, distrusting the pallid, gaunt stranger staring back at her. Her cheeks were sunken, and dark black rings clung to the bags under each eye. "You may not look like this year's prom queen," she said, reaching for the bottle of sickly sweet grandma-scented perfume on the bedside table. "But you smell fantastic." "Food, water, fire," she repeated, padding back down the stairs. Taking her emergency water bottle, she poured half the bottle's remnants into a bowl of oats. She then placed the bowl among the warm ashes of the bonfire outside while she went to fetch fresh water. The empty buckets were still there, where she'd abandoned them by the river, as was the body of the white beast. Lucy quickly filled both buckets with meltwater, then staggered back to the house, the pair weighing heavily on her emaciated frame. By the early afternoon, she'd managed to clean out the sodden brick fireplace in the living room and install several fresh pieces of firewood, which she immediately set about lighting to get the carpet drying. By nightfall, her hands were blistered from wielding the axe. She fell onto the fresh mattress with immense appreciation. It had been worth the struggle to drag it down the staircase and into the room, and the warmth of the fire provided immediate reward. With a groan, she lifted herself into a sitting position and prodded a boiling potato. It was about done, so she tipped the chopped carrot in with it. Lifting a warm mug to her lips, she took a sip, letting the warmth of the hot water spread through her hollow insides. Lucy opened her diary and randomly flicked through the hundreds of pages she'd filled. She often did this, adding extra details in the margins here and there as they occurred to her. November 19th. Found some horse antibiotics in the house, hoping they'll get rid of this goddamn rash. November 25th. Rash is gone. So is about half of my body mass through shitting and puking. Thanks a million, whoever created this drug. Real nice job. On behalf of horses everywhere, you're an asshole. December 4th. Ugh, I want some goddamn meat. I miss burgers. And fries. And barbecue sauce. I could probably try and snare something at the edge of the forest, but if I brought blood on the farm, that could be game over. So I guess it's just going to be more oats, potatoes, and carrots. That's my life in three words. December 5th. Thought of three more. Lonely. Cold. Abandoned. December 6th. If anyone ever finds this diary, know that I hated every minute. I'll probably burn it before that, though. Might burn it tonight. Who knows? Who cares? I guess that's more to the point. Don't actually know why I'm bothering. Maybe I'm just too scared to let myself die. That's probably the most pitiful thing of it all. If I was braver, I'd be with Dan by now. I dreamt about him again. I dream about him almost every night. October 3rd. Got a fire going in the fireplace. Only took all damn day. At least I can read in the evenings now. They've got a pretty big bookcase here. It's just a shame all of the books are terrible. I found a map and some mail, though, so I have figured out where I am. Looks like I'm someplace near Preston, Missouri. It's around 200 miles to St. Louis. If I can figure out a way to get the car working, I could make it in a few hours. From there, it's about 800 miles to D.C., which I reckon I could do in 2 days if I break the journey in Columbus. Interstate 70 should do it. I just need a working vehicle. When I get to D.C., I will find Dan's father. He needs to know what happened to his son. To my Dan. To his boy. It's all I can think about doing. October 4th. Let's say I can cover 15 miles a day by foot. I could make St. Louis in 2 weeks. October 5th. Gone off the walking idea. Mainly because I don't want to die at the side of some forest road, killed in the night by one of those beast things. On the upside, there's a ton of oats in the barn. I make it around 90 pounds worth. October 6th. Found some vegetable rows that are still good. Carrots and potatoes. Jackpot. November 3rd. Weather's turned real bad. Lightning storm last night. Not gonna lie, it was terrifying. Been pouring rain all day. Rain is cold. Wind, too. November 4th. Winter's definitely approaching. Frost on the ground this morning. Need to make sure I've got enough wood stored up. I think I'm gonna be stuck here. Gonna dig a latrine pit behind the barn tomorrow. Or maybe build some sort of compost storage. You never know when you might need fertilizer. She continued leafing back through the notebook until she returned to the most recent two entries and added a few missing details. 8th of February. They were heavily armed. All of them had guns, mostly handguns. I think one of them had a rifle. I need to plan in case they come back. If they do, this time I'll kill them. 9th of February. Estimated. Back on track with wood and water. Beast's body is still there. Autopsy starts tomorrow. You have no right to be here. Luce, I just came to pay my respect. Yeah, and now you can leave, snapped Lucy. Her mother pulled off the large fake Gucci sunglasses she was wearing, revealing watery eyes. Lucy, if I could have done things different. I told you already. Leave or I'm calling the police. Her mother started to cry. You were young. You don't understand what it was like. I understand enough, Mom. Goodbye. Lucy turned and walked away, back towards the open coffin, where a small group of mourners were talking, and thanked them for coming. Their responses washed over her as she smiled politely, hearing nothing, all the while discreetly digging the nail of her thumb into the side of her finger as hard as she could. She waited for minutes before she dared glance over her shoulder. When she finally did, her mother was gone. She woke, panting. Her cheeks were wet. The fire was burning low, just about keeping the freezing cold at bay. Pale blue sunlight peered through the cracks in the curtains. Ouch! She winced, as her tender shoulder muscles reminded her of yesterday's woodcutting. The image of her mother flashed across her mind as she climbed to her feet. She grunted, remembering her dream. Dunking a rag into a bucket of warm water by the fire, she quickly cleaned herself. You need more potatoes, girl! She reprimanded as she washed her skeletal midriff, the rag bumping over each rib down to her bony pelvis. The image of her crying mother flashed before her eyes again. I swear to God, one more dream about my freaking mother and I'm changing the channel. Not you, she added, chastising the redundant TV. Thanks again, Paul. Much obliged, she muttered as she pulled the Wilson Leader's holster over her shoulder. She reached under her pillow and took out the gun itself.
I think a plan B would be wise, don't you?
All right, then, she decided, securing it into the pouch. Entering the master bedroom, Lucy slid a stool in front of the wardrobe and stepped up. Reaching up to the dusty, out-of-sight top shelf, she felt around until her hand found the farmer's shotgun. She groped around for a box of shells, which she took, too, blowing the dust off both. She hadn't fired a shotgun since her childhood.
Point and squeeze, she heard her father's voice say. But watch out for the kickback. It's got one mother of a kickback.
Her mind flew back to a vivid childhood memory.
Don't hesitate, urged her father.
The cow was badly injured, lying on the ground, moaning in agony. Its legs and throat bore the deep bite marks of a coyote. Her dad had already killed the wild dog. Now it was her turn.
Don't think on it, said her dad. It's no kindness at all if you don't get on with it.
Lucy raised the gun to her shoulder and peered down the long barrel.
Now remember, you're not aiming between the eyes, you're going above them. Find that midpoint between the eyes and the horns, her father counseled.
Lucy looked at the moaning creature and squeezed the trigger. The cow jerked its head as Lucy pulled the trigger. The pellets tore through its neck and into its shoulder. The animal screamed in pain.
Ah, shit!
Cried her dad, grabbing the shotgun from Lucy's hands and reloading it in a flash, firing a shell directly into the animal's head, immediately silencing its wails. He fired a third shot, just to be sure, all in the space of a few seconds.
That's why we don't hesitate, he said,
thrusting the empty rifle onto her chest and walking back to the truck.
Hey, he yelled, snapping Lucy out of her horrified stupor. Hurry up and grab the other shovel. If we get her buried quick, we'll be back home by 8. No point making a bad day worse by delaying dinner.
Lucy blinked several times as her mind jolted back to the present day and the dusty shotgun she was holding from atop the stool in the master bedroom. She descended the stairs and cleaned the gun by the fireside, with the living room curtains open to let light flood in. Once satisfied it was in working order, she loaded each barrel and made her way out to the barn, where she hid the gun out of sight, but within a few paces of the entrance. It was time for the autopsy. Not wanting to risk any sort of contamination, Lucy fashioned a crude laboratory uniform for herself out of kitchen aprons, tying a dishcloth over her mouth and nose. Next, and with extreme care, she curated a sharps box along with more plastic tubs for holding offcuts. One chilly walk later, she clambered back onto the far icy riverbank. The dead beast had a sunken appearance. It looked drier, wrinkled, its muscles had shrunk.
That's not right, said Lucy under her breath, noticing the thin layer of vapor rising up from the corpse. Vapor means heat in the body, but it's icy.
She backed up a little and picked up a rock from the embankment. Holding her pistol in one hand, she hurled the rock at the creature's body. The rock landed with a dull thud and rolled off the furry torso, which undulated briefly with the impact, then fell still.
Okay, she said, approaching again with the gun still raised. So you're still dead. That's good.
Oh, geez, she spluttered, covering her nose with her scarf. Now that she was only a few yards away, the stench of the corpse was overpowering. This thing was no longer prepared to go gracefully. She set out her notepad to the side, ready to begin with a quick sketch of the creature's appearance, including its injuries. She then quickly recorded its length with a tape measure before browsing the knives she'd brought for the next stage.
Bit of a step up from your last dissection, Lucy,
she muttered, remembering the dog cadavers they'd been tasked with dissecting at veterinary school.
Time to see what's under the hood.
The chest remained the obvious place to begin. It contained the vital organs and was the site of the beast's injuries, the most likely cause of death. She pushed a serrated blade into its fur and began to cut in a sawing motion, creating a lateral incision along its left side.
Vapor billowed outward through the new perforation in the flesh, making Lucy lean back sharply until the rate of expulsion slowed. It was like opening the door of a hot oven. She resumed the cutting. Once she'd reached its hip, she used the scissors to make perpendicular incisions at the top and bottom of its torso, creating a large flap of skin and fur. Nervously, she peeled it back and stared at the beast's steaming insides. It was astonishing. A series of symmetrical organs filled the torso, shielded by a ribcage boasting a lattice effect of interwoven bones and cartilage. Inside the lattice, nestled behind the first row of organs, was a second, smaller ribcage, shielding an organ she couldn't see, like a Russian doll set. She hastily sketched it as best she could before taking the knife to the first rib. It had no effect. With some reservations, she reached for the saw. The bones crunched hideously as she drove the jagged blades through them in turn. Lucy began to sweat from the exertion. After the last bone was severed, she lifted the lid off the entire ribcage, laying bare the organs inside. She wiped her hands clean of fluid and blood using the frozen grass beneath her, then set about sketching the central organ system. Four lungs stood in each corner, interspersed by bundles of fibrous tissue comprised of different colored strands. Each bundle was as big as the lung next to it. The lungs connected to their adjacent fibrous masses through a series of vein-like appendages, which themselves divided exponentially into the complex, woven networks of organic cabling that disappeared into the secondary ribcage and outwards in all directions around the body. A coil of black tubing, about the width of her index finger, nestled atop each lung, akin to a soft snail shell. Unlike the fibrous masses which burrowed inward, these four coils had a definite tip. The tapered ends pointed upwards to where the ribcage had been. Lucy re-examined the flap of skin she'd peeled off. Sure enough, there were four corresponding apertures on each corner. Her mind leapt back to Toby and Dan's bodies and the puncture marks she'd seen on both of them. The diameter of their injuries correlated with those of the four coils. Lucy furiously annotated her drawings. "This could be one of the beast's weapons," she scribbled. She cut one of the black coils out from the creature's chest and examined it up close, unraveling it and testing its elasticity. It was only about a yard and a half long, with a small amount of give. "The sharp end of the coil is filled with a white chalky powder," she wrote, finding this to be the case for all but one of the coils. Lucy placed the dissected coil into a plastic container and scraped the chalky powder of the others into a separate tub for preservation. The light began to fade. Already the day was drawing to a close, and she'd only explored a fraction of the beast's anatomy. Recovering its chest, she gathered her amateur autopsy kit and began to cross the ladder again. As she passed over the receding ice, a faint glow caught her attention. Lucy stopped once she was on the home side again and inspected more closely. Clinging to the underside of the ice was an iridescent algae, glowing a soft blue. After drawing a hasty sketch, she withdrew to the house for the night. There she labeled and dated her collection, using an empty shelf in the kitchen as the exhibition stand. Before turning in, she burned the bloodied pair of jeans outside on what remained of the bandit's funeral pyre. As she watched the flames from the kitchen, thinking of Dan's unburied, uncremated body, she made a vow in her diary. "I will learn everything I can about these creatures, and I will bring an end to them."